Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We are going to be talking about the Billy Meier case today, particularly about his book called The Might of Thoughts. Billy has written over 50 books. His books are typically bilingual, and the left page will be German, the right page will be English or whatever language the book happens to be translated into. In the German of Billy's writings is what's called an evolutive code. And if you read this information in the German, it's going to affect you in a subconscious and an unconscious way. It will help your conscious evolution in ways that you're not even aware of. Somehow it pulls information out of what are called the universal storage banks. And you could think of these universal storage banks as archives of information, but not physical information, and a kind of energy that's being stored, information that's being stored by our solar system, by our planet, by our galaxy, by our universe. So there are universal storage banks, galactic storage banks associated with the solar system and to the planet that you live on. And if you have the right kind of thinking, there's a way to pull information down from these storage banks. And the other thing that happens from these storage banks is this information is sent out in signals, in kind of impulses. And if you're sensitive enough, you'll be able to pick up on these impulses. Now, when Billy was a very, very young boy, before he was even 5 years old, he could pick up on these impulses from the universal storage banks. And there is a writing that Billy has called How It All Began. And it tells on February 3rd of 1941, when he had just turned four, he was living in a little village called Niederflux, which is close to a town called Bulach, Switzerland, which is surrounded by the Eichenmoder and Bruder Mountains and wide forests and meadows. And Billy woke up about 3 a.m. one morning on a mild night in May. Again, it was 1941. He went outside and sat down on a bench, and he looked up at a beautiful starry night, and he started to get these impulses. And he heard a voice in his own head that said, "My life is made out of the love of creation." And a short time later, he started to say things which were very unusual. He said, "Since ancient times, I've lived among the stars." And suddenly he knew who he was and what his mission on the earth was. And he later recognized these impulses, which were coming from the storage banks. So it took him quite a long time to understand everything that happened to him on that amazing night in May when he was still a very, very young boy. But this article called How It All Began is very, very interesting, and I'll just read part of it. It says, "Thus, from a very early age, I learned to maintain my own trains of thought in a controlled manner, to draw my own conclusions, and to make my own decisions. Through this, I also learned to separate the wheat from the chaff and to look for the truth where it is basically to be found, namely in one's own inner and innermost. as well as one's own intellect, one's own reasons, one's own thoughts, contemplations, and feelings. So even at such a young age, Billy was aware of the importance of our thoughts. And, you know, this story of Edward Albert Meyer is a story of extraterrestrial contact, but it's much more than that, because what we're seeing here is the second stage of a kind of disclosure. The first disclosure was, are there extraterrestrials out there, and is there life in the universe? And the people that are ready for that information are well aware that it's true. But it's not being forced on the society, because there are those that aren't ready. And those who have the right to ignore this information, it shouldn't be forced on them by authorities. But the second stage of this information is a higher level of understanding of the universe. And when we get to this higher level of understanding, we should stop doing the things that we're doing now, destroying nature and killing the planet that we live on. Let me read another passage here. It says, from this developed the recognition and the application of self-responsibility, and the recognition and fulfillment of responsibility in regard to fellow human beings, the world of plants and animals, and in regard to life and the creational laws and recommendations. So what are some of these creational laws? Let's run through them quickly. The first law of the universe is the law of love. It's not a romantic love. It's a love based on respect, a love based on reverence. It literally radiates. This love radiates from the intelligence that exists in our universe. There is something called the universal consciousness, which radiates love. And if you're sensitive to it, you can do what's called finding or pick up on this love. And Billy writes about this love, and he says, love is the highest principle in all creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. So this is a love that's very logical. It's very stable. It's effective love. It isn't based on emotions. And it's very respectful of life, and it takes the approach of live and help live rather than just live and let live. So that's a quick understanding of the first creational natural law. The second creational natural law is the law of striving, and everything in the universe must strive, including the universal consciousness. It strives to evolve the universe. The superintelligence behind our universe is in the first stage of its evolution. And it creates human spirit forms to play a role in its evolution, because we are kind of boots on the ground for the universal intelligence. So every human being has a spirit form, what's called a Geist form in the German. And you can't really nail down the location of the spirit form, but it's pretty much located in the what's called the superior colliculus. But its influence goes over the whole body. The superior colliculus is the middle brain, the area that controls sight, the area that controls the integration of your senses. And every human being must strive, every plant and every animal must strive to survive. This is the creational natural law. And we must strive to evolve. And I want to read a little bit on striving, the importance of striving. Every single life form feels, and every single understanding human being recognizes, that the striving itself must be striven for, that striving requires an expenditure of effort and must be achieved through hard work, that is, striving is not completely dropped into one's lap, and that again and again there are circumstances that work against the striving. Therefore, one's striving cannot be constantly and really gratified, because there are multifarious powers which work against the striving. Therefore, it has to be in accord with natural law that an opposite pole is positioned against the striving, based on the teaching of the creational law that there must always two poles, a plus and a minus. So the striving is the second creational natural law, and there's also difficulties that we face with striving, and it's to be expected. The first law is creational law of the universe is love. The second is striving. The third is learning to think in a harmonious, neutral, positive way. And when you think in a neutral, positive way, then you'll bring good circumstances into your life, because what you think you make real, what you think about yourself, you become. This is the third creational natural law, the law of harmony, that we should search for neutral, positive thought. The fourth creational natural law is the law of population. And that depends on the planet. Our planet is really designed for about 500 million to about a billion people. We're currently at 9 billion roughly. And because of that, we're destroying the natural world at a tremendous rate. We're destroying our forests. The forests moderate the weather. That's why we have such extreme weather. That's a whole program in and of itself. But everything in nature has a purpose, and you can't destroy a forest without destroying what it does. And one of the things that the forests do is they keep the shade there in the summer. They prevent erosion. They provide a home for many animals, and all the animals have purpose and a place. They create a kind of turbulence when the wind blows over them, and that turbulence brings water. So forests have a way of preventing droughts from occurring. The other thing that forests do in the winter is they don't reflect so much light back. They hold on to the heat. So it's the greenhouse in a way that brings oxygen, for one thing, into the atmosphere. So we are a people that are ill in our consciousness, and we're running headlong to our own destruction, and only a change in our consciousness can stop this disaster, which is coming quickly down the tracks. There's a giant freight train coming towards us. We're standing on the tracks, and that light is off in the distance, but it's getting closer and closer and closer. So understanding these creational natural laws, first is the law of love, the second is the law of striving, the third is the law of harmony in your thinking, the fourth is a population that's between 500 million and a billion. And another creational natural law that governs the universe is the law of reincarnation. That means that your spiritual self, your spiritual consciousness, your Geist form as it is, your spirit form will never die. Your current personality will be dissolved. Your current body will die. And the spirit form takes the consciousness with it to what's called the spirit realm. And every planet has its own spirit realm, every planet that has life. And the spirit form takes your consciousness and takes your consciousness into an area called the overall consciousness block, which is like a storage area for your most recent personality. And the spirit form has a way of processing your personality, getting all the information that's of value from your previous life. So everything that you learned in terms of wisdom and logic and confidence and a sense of satisfaction, a sense of stability, a sense of responsibility, all the things that were important that you learned from your previous life are stored as an essence, and eventually our spirit form absorbs those values, those evolutive values. The spirit form stores those, it absorbs them, the spirit form gets stronger, it gets smarter, which each physical incarnation, then in that storage area, in that overall consciousness block, after the old personality is absorbed and all of the things that you've learned out of your previous life are stored in your spirit form, the spirit form then goes about creating a new personality for the new incarnation. And then at the right time, there will be some human fetus that will need a spirit form, and your spirit form will be pulled into that fetus 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg, and the spirit form goes into the center of the middle brain in that area called the superior colliculus, and it'll bring with it the new personality. See, what reincarnates is your spirit form. Every new lifetime, you get a new personality. And that is called your material consciousness. The child will have a new conscious mind, a new subconscious mind, a new unconscious mind, a new personality. It will look at life differently than it did in the previous lifetime. This is one of the things that the universe does, is that we get each new lifetime a kind of a new perspective on things. And that's called your material consciousness. Now, in your superior colliculus, you still have your spirit form that has all the wisdom of your previous lifetimes. And you may have between 4 and 5 million years of lifetimes if you're a typical Earth human. And all that wisdom is in your spiritual consciousness. And all those evolutive values from those previous lifetimes are in your spiritual consciousness. Now, you will get impulses from your spiritual consciousness that will help to guide the material consciousness. These are kind of it's your inner guide. And if you're sensitive enough, and that's what it says, then it says everyone has a spirit form that never dies, that never sleeps. It records everything that you do. It will tell you if your thinking is right or wrong if you've learned to pay attention to it. And that little bit of information is what we're expanding on in many ways in the Mind of Thoughts. And that will be eventually, in a roundabout way, what we get to a little bit later into the show. But I was talking about the creational natural laws because I started out with Billy the young boy, and he mentioned the creational natural laws, which are the law of love, the law of striving, the law of harmony, the law of population, and the law of reincarnation. Those are five laws that the public doesn't know about yet, that the public needs to know about yet, so that the public can correct their thinking. And let me pick back up again in 1941 when Billy was a very young boy. It says, well, it happened during a mild night in May in the year 1941. And if I remember rightly, it was around 3 a.m. in the night of Saturday, May 4th. In any case, this is how it has all been etched in my memory. Indeed, because everything which took place at that time was a special experience. I slept and dreamt that I saw my body lying asleep in the bed. thinking about it in my sleep, I made the observation that I really was asleep, which somehow amazed me, and I moved to wake up deliberately. A little drowsy, I looked out the window, through which I saw the clear, starry sky. So I rose from my bed, went to the window, and climbed out. As it was almost at ground level, outside I sat down on the simple bench which stood against the wall of the house which my father had built. I could not see the moon. However, the sky was clear and wrapped in velvety black, and millions of stars shone down from the firmament. For a few moments, I sat there like that and looked up to the stars while pondering and in my thoughts flying far into the universe. However, suddenly, something peculiar happened inside of me, which from the next moment irrevocably changed my whole life. Strangely touched, I looked at my hands and body, and I could only vaguely recognize them. So I touched my body and felt it. And then I heard my own voice say, "My life is made out of the love of creation." Well, creation is a synonym for the universal consciousness, and it radiates love, even though it has no personality. The spiritual intelligence in the universe is what's called a Wesenheiten in German, and it radiates love, but it has no personality. It is not a Heavenly Father. It will not rescue you. It creates human spirit forms as a part of its own evolution. And it's actually, our universe is, although it's 46 trillion years old, it's in the first stage of its evolution. And how do we know that? Because there is a material belt in our universe. And that material belt is where the galaxy and the stars all exist, all the planets and the nebula all exist, all the asteroids and meteors are all in that material belt. There are seven counter-rotating belts in the universe. Now, our universe will stay in this configuration for about 300, I think it's 311 trillion years, something along those lines, 316, something like that. A time span we can't even really wrap our minds around. And at which point it's going to, that's at the end of its contraction. So our universe expands for about over 155 trillion years. Then it will contract for 155 trillion years. And then it recreates itself. And this is a process which recurs over and over and over again. And every time the universe recreates itself, it's in a different form. Well, we're in a form right now where there is truly material in the universe. That isn't always the case. It's kind of a disturbing thought, but this is just the beginning stage for universal evolution. And there are other universes, in fact. There's a parallel universe to our universe that's called the Tao universe. Now, Billy had a mentor from the Tao universe. His mentor for the first 11 years of his life was a man named Spock, who I'm reading about Billy's experience before he actually met Spock. But Billy will have 11 years of contacts with Spock, who teaches him many, many things. And then after that, in 1953, he will get his second mentor, who is a woman from the Tao universe. And Billy learns very, very many interesting things from Askit. And then after his 11 years of study with Askit, he will, for 11 years, have no contacts and live a little more normal of a life. And then right around 1975 or so, he started to have contacts with a woman named Semyase, who would land her beam ship right in Switzerland. right there. Billy lives about 45 minutes east of Zurich in a little town called Hinterschmidruti. And she would land her beam ship in 1945 in Clearing and get out of the craft and sit with Billy. Well, people started hearing about this, and they had to go find a more private way to have these meetings. But she would sit down many times with Billy in the forest and discuss these kind of things. She would talk about the universe, the creation, Earth history, which was very, very interesting because Billy quickly learned that there were very, very ancient civilizations on the Earth, that 133,000 years ago was the civilization of Atlantis and Lemuria. And he learned that that civilization was really started by extraterrestrial humans. You see, we always think about human beings being from the Earth, where in fact there are human beings all over the galaxy. And we're not the oldest human race by any reason. But some of these extraterrestrial humans came to the Earth. They created Atlantis. Atlant was their leader. He was a man of obvious Lyran descent with broad shoulders and pasty white skin. And he brought his wife, Caryatide, and hundreds of thousands of other people eventually also joined him. And they settled in an island continent that was somewhere right around the equator, I believe, between South America and Africa, I would guess. And there was beautiful architecture associated with the Atlanteans. And another man came, who I believe his name was Muras, who eventually built the city of Lemuria. And he also built two underground cities called Agartha Alpha and Agartha Beta. And these cities were connected by tunnels, underground tunnel system. And these two extraterrestrial cities existed for thousands and thousands of years without trouble. Now, there was another individual who came to the Earth, and his name was Eris the Barbarian. And he settled in the north, and he brought about 200 leaders and sub-leaders with him. The area in the north that he settled at was called Hyperborea at that time. And this was before the shift of the axis of the Earth. Now, these were the kinds of information that Semyase would tell Billy about, and I'm sure he would sit there completely fascinated. But Eris the Barbarian, one of the scientists that he brought was a man named Semyase, who I believe was an earlier incarnation of Billy's spirit form. And Semyase actually mated with an Earth human. And the offspring was 16 feet tall, and they called him Adam, Adam then mated with another Earth woman. And this was the beginning of, I believe, the white human race that was native to the Earth. Now, when I say that, I say the white human race because I believe there was already evolving Earth human on the Earth at that time. Besides these extraterrestrials, there were dark-skinned Earth people who were already evolving at that time. So we had these very advanced extraterrestrial human civilizations which were living right alongside what the Maya information calls the Evas, who were just native Earth people who were in their natural evolution. Now, even before Atlantis, there was a civilization, if you go back 150,000 years ago, that was headed off by a man named Pelagon. And Pelagon came from the Pleiaren star system. And Pelagon was what's called a king of wisdom. So was Atlan, actually. A king of wisdom is a special title. It's sometimes called JHWH. The Meyer Information talks about these very highly evolved people. And if you look at evolution, human evolution like a ladder, we here on the earth are still on the second rung of the ladder, the second step. But an Ishwish is on stage 5. And typically Ishwishes are very spiritual, very, very balanced people. But every once in a while you'll get one that's not like that. But typically, as we move through these higher levels of evolution, you're more evolved, you're more peaceful, you're more knowledgeable. There was a man named Pelagon who was very, very evolved, who started a civilization on the earth about 150,000 years ago. And he was so evolved, the legends are that he could make plants grow with his mind, that he could also, he would literally hover. He could fly, so to speak. So, and this is supposed to be true, that the material consciousness, and we have a spiritual consciousness and we have a material consciousness, but the material consciousness in these later evolutions, after we've evolved, after we've had millions of years of reincarnation, after we go up these all these higher levels of evolution, we can do tremendous things like telepathy, telekinesis, teleportation. And that's why Billy has written this book called The Might of Thoughts, to introduce to the people of the earth the true nature of our thoughts and how powerful our thoughts really, really are. So I think I'll settle down since I kind of went all over the place there. But I want to talk about our thoughts here. In the Meyer Information, in the Might of Thoughts on page 224 says, therefore it is necessary to search for the source of the life power and to develop the power in order to have a reliable life potential upon which one can depend, therefore in which one completely trusts. So we're told to search for the source of the life power. Well, what is the life power? The life power is kind of a healthy, neutral, positive thought which radiates out of our consciousness. The life power is a very real thing. And the life power enabled us to live over 1,000 years in the very ancient past. But our life power is much weaker now, because our thoughts are much weaker. The German word for the source is Quelle, and we're told to search for the source of this life power and to develop that power. The life power, again, is known as Lebenskraft in the German. The source of the life power, which must be created by oneself, lies in our consciousness. In our thoughts. Now this is amazing. I had a hard time with this for a couple weeks, trying to really wrap my mind around the fact that my literal life power is strengthened or weakened because of the thoughts in my consciousness. Now, your thoughts, your conscious thoughts can either strengthen or weaken other people's life power. We are told to tend and nurture our thoughts, to have the right kind of thoughts, because the right kind of thoughts enhances this life power. The life power resides in our own thoughts. So we must work to do a kind of thinking that generates this life power. We must strive for these thoughts in an imaginative way. In contrast to this is when tangled thoughts appear in our mind. So if you're having neutral positive thoughts, you are enhancing your life power. If you're having confused thoughts or negative thoughts, you are weakening your life power. And if you're having negative thoughts, you often have what's called confusion. Let me read what it says here. It says, this is a contrast to entangled ideas confuse the thoughts and abruptly go from one extreme to another. Now, this occurs because of something called ideas, I-D-E-A-S, which are unripe, incomplete, not fully developed thoughts. But sometimes we get hung up on these thoughts that haven't been completely developed, and we rotate and repeat these thoughts, and they cause us to have confusion, tangled ideas, and we go from one extreme to another. Now, the German word Wirr, V-I-R-R-E, means confused, jumbled, scattered. But the phrase Wenn wir Ideen seems to translate to when tangled ideas. And this word Wir appears in Contact Report 115. And I believe that Wir in this case means jumbled, scattered, confused. And in Contact Report 114, we're talking about jealousy and egoism that sometimes has built up in Billy's group there. And in this case, Billy's talking to Quetzal about this internal strife that appears in the group. And Quetzal has this very profound thing he says about love. He says, love is neither a privilege nor a right of possession, but rather an acquired understanding, a sincere feeling of harmony and recognition of the solidarity and well-being of one's own neighbor. Anyway, there is some kind of strife in Billy's group, some wrong thinking in Billy's group, and it relates to Billy's attention towards certain group members, and there's probably this jealousy. Let me continue here with what Quetzal says. He says, erroneous and confused thoughts arrive from this, and these degenerate into rather extreme forms, and the end, and end at an incomprehensible notion that Billy has greater affection for some than others. Let's just put it that way. There's an interesting article related to this idea of confusion. I want to go off away from the mind of thoughts just for a minute and look at some other articles and other contact reports. And there's an article that Billy has written about belief and faith in God. And Billy, as you know, says there's a universal consciousness, but it doesn't behave anything like the God that's talked about by our religions. So let me read what he says here. Where no reason can be seen for something, not only does the individual believer hold himself, but usually all believers in God hold themselves to the belief that the corresponding incomprehensible events were the work in the will of God as a world mover and a fate mover, which would simply have to be accepted. And they think that their lives follow a well-thought-out and God-given destiny to which they are given because their idea of a higher order, purpose, and destiny claims calms them down, In this way, the life focused on a God gives meaning to the believer, even if this is extremely deceptive. But through this deceptive sense of life, the believing person is given a wrong meaning and a confused structure. So there is that confusion. People attributing all these strange events in their life to the will of God. And so an example of confusion, of tangled thoughts. Let me give an example of how to avoid tangled thoughts. And this deals with an article called Concentration, Meditation, Sleep. And it says here, if on falling asleep, virtuous, good, and positive thoughts and feelings are cultivated in a concentrated and controlled way, then the sleep is also balanced. While dreams express themselves in virtuous thoughts and feelings, hence it is necessary to cultivate concentrated, controlled, virtuous thoughts and feelings in a meditative manner before falling asleep. Well, I tell you, I've watched a whole lot of violent stuff before going to sleep, and it's funny, sometimes I fall right to sleep, but I just wake up tired. Could be that I need to cultivate these concentrated and controlled thoughts. Let me get back to the mighty thoughts. Let me read another phrase here. Whereby a misdirection of thoughts arises, which triggers emotions and can even lead to murder and manslaughter. And we'll talk about that a little later in the show. So when you have ideas, I-D-E-A-S, they are thoughts which are not completely developed. And these ideas cause confusion, entangled thoughts, and extreme emotions. So recognize yourself when you're in that state. There could be some topic. I can think of one issue, one topic right now that I have in my life that sometimes will put me in that confused and highly emotional state. So just remember that the negative and the positive belong together because they are two powers which depend on one another. We should never seek to separate the negative from the positive. If we do, we can go out of control of the good human nature. And this is a terrible thing that we have to be aware of, to not try to push the negative out completely. You have to recognize that the negative and the positive belong there. Let me read a little bit from Fiegel Bulletin 78, which again is talking about this confusion that we can sometimes get. It says, it should be realized that the religions and the sects are attacking the human beings of earth with irrational teachings, making fools of them. They are making them dependent, belief-oriented, without hope of rescue, and putting them in bondage. And the Billy speaks very negative of our religions. He goes on to say, in this same way, as they are driven into the clutches of fear, terror, and feelings of guilt, through false, confused, and there's our German word, wir, and irrational dogmas, and threats of godly punishment. So these incomplete ideas generate confusion. So if you have confusion and your psyche is in turmoil, it can be from these ideas, which are different than the completely developed thoughts, the ideas, the I-D-E-A-L-S. The ideals with an L are the mature, ripe, complete thoughts which help produce stability. The ideas, I-D-E-A-S, cause you to think compulsively, to rotate in negative thoughts, cause extreme emotions. Some people will literally become murderers because of this wrong kind of thinking. The reason what is happening is that in your idea, you have what's called an unvalue. It's something that you shouldn't be valuing, something that's negative. You're holding on to something that's negative. You don't want to give it up. And we'll continue with that in a minute, but I want to continue down a couple other thoughts. About a month ago, I was in a crowd of people where I felt the life power was very low, at least in my subjective opinion. These people, at least in my opinion, had a very weak source of life power. And one individual I saw, I was just shocked because they had changed so much in a year. It had been about a year since I had seen them. And your life power affects everything. It affects your whole life. So search for the source of your life power and develop it. If you do, you will create for yourself a reliable life potential on which you can trust. So the life power, the Lebenskraft, can lead to our life potential. And life potential, it appears as one word in the German. The life power. The definition, again, we are talking about the Quelle, the source of the life power. What is the source? The source is the point of the origin, a procurement, a beginning. One that initiates an author. A source is something that causes or produces something, or is the origin of it. The German word for life power is Lebenskraft. It can also mean life force, and this is where people, the German experts, have these debates. Let's just say that. Lebenskraft can mean life force, life power, vital energy. Lebenskraft can mean vitality. Sometimes it even, in some cases, can mean animal spirit. Lebenskraft is talked about in Contact Report 39, where Billy and Fatah are discussing the mental forces of human beings. Let me continue here. It says, then the case is indeed clear. There's something else, however, that you should explain for everyone, for the interest of our cause, namely the connections of certain connections with the age of the earth human being. I already know about these things because Svath informed me about them when I was a boy. Nevertheless, these things were never written down, so others aren't oriented about them. I'm referring to the fact that the mental forces of every single human being are capable of raising or lowering the life force of others. I believe that a good speaker or a good musician can help raise the life force of others through his words, through his music. The thinking of a life form through the cooperation of the spirit produces an extremely logical, thus creation-related force that is released as the high-frequented vibration in radiation. A tremendous force is thus produced, which is said it can influence everything. Everything. Maybe even nature as part of everything. At the earliest times, when the human being of Earth was also produced by his indirect ancestors, the average age was reckoned at 1,007 years of life. He trained, he was informed by his producers, and he possessed an enormous level of knowledge and abilities. So our life force, because of our Pleiaran ancestors, in part, helped keep our thinking correctly, allowed us to have very, very long lifespans. However, the Meyer information explains that the religions of the earth humans have depleted our Lebenskraft, our life force, and have therefore shortened our lifespans. And the OM talks about this. Everything that the human inherits, everything that he brings with him through the billionfold existence of the past, everything that he enjoyed, knew, read, learned, or experienced in their past lives lives it lies concealed in our unconsciousness. And the OM goes on and says, why therefore does he not master the technique of concentration? And why does he not order his unconscious and make full use of all his knowledge and ability? And this is the thing. Our unconscious has incredible power associated with it. The subconscious some too. But for this it is required that he fight his own stupidity, and I fight mine all the time, and acknowledge that the material intellect constitutes no human, if it does not also in the same measure work together with the spiritual intellect. So your spiritual consciousness and your material consciousness should be working together. And if they are, then you're going to tap into some of the power, the Lebenskraft, the power of your consciousness, some of that unconscious power. Let's talk about the Tree of Life symbol. The Meyer symbol of the Tree of Life shows lines moving upward. However, the RP symbol has the lines that move downward. So we literally, our peace symbol is a turned around Tree of Life. And it, when we see the peace symbol, it has a very negative influence on our subconscious. And this does not let the force of life become effective, but lets the force flow into the ground. In that way, life's counterpart is changed to an annihilator of life. The so-called peace symbol symbolizes destruction, and I call the earth the planet of unnecessary death because we have so much death that is unnecessary. And this kind of death is annihilation and ruin. It does not refer to death that is beneficial where you pass on and at the right time and it's part of your evolution because we evolve in the death cycle, we evolve in the spirit realm. It's where we absorb all the wisdom of our previous life into the spirit form. So we have a very important kind of striving that takes place in death and preparing for the new lifetime. But the so-called peace symbol is actually the symbol of senseless death. Which we have a lot of senseless death here on the earth. Now, the Lebenskraft is sometimes talked about in the Fiegel bulletins. And in Bulletin 78, it says, the spirit of the human being is more or less his or her fine fluidal energy source, his or her indestructible inner life power. Let me talk about the fine fluidal energies a little bit. Because I'm sitting at a desk with books, and these books I've been in contact with a lot, and they have my fine fluidal energies in them. Because all of our thoughts, our life power produces this fine fluidal energy, which is stored in our books, in our walls, in our clothes, in our furniture, in our instruments, anything that we come in contact with, your chairs, even the trees outside, have this fine fluidal energy. And this fine fluidal energy can have a lot of different impacts. My material talks about a woman who had lived in this house for many, many years, I mean decades and decades and decades, and around the same time about every day, there would be a ghost of a little girl that would go through the house and sing and make noise. It was actually this woman's stored up fine fluidal energy in this house that was causing this to happen. So the fine fluidal energies are tremendously powerful. And Billy talks about that in these old monasteries and churches in Switzerland, that some of these fine fluidal energies are stored, and they're sometimes negative, very unhealthy. Lots of unhealthy thoughts have occurred in these churches, which are centuries old, and these fine fluidal energies are stored in these churches. And if you're a person like Billy, who is very sensitive to these fine fluidal energies, it can literally almost kill him. He was almost killed by just being in some of these churches that contain these old, very unhealthy energies. You know, where people they have funerals. They go in there and they lament and all of this wrong thinking, which is very intense, very, very intense. Deep sadness and regret and all these things are stored in these structures, in these buildings. And you go in there, you can feel it if you're a sensitive. And it's just something to keep in mind. The life power is said to be part of our spirit. So your life power, your thoughts, your consciousness can literally raise and lower people's life power. Let me continue. The source of the life power, which again must be created by ourself, lies in our consciousness, that is to say our thoughts, which must be formed, tended, and nurtured. And the Meyer material talks about nurturing, strengthening your good, healthy thoughts. And this was disturbing for me a bit. It took a couple of weeks of self-examination before I could get to understand that I could really use this. My thoughts could invigorate my life power. And it has to do, you have to find out what invigorates your life power, what thoughts. And I found actually that exercise, which I just didn't realize, it was literally one of my catalysts for my whole life power. It invigorates me. Other thoughts will drain you of energy. So I've had to relearn a little bit about how that through exercise that can help you. Always keep your positive, neutral positive. Now, it may not be the same way for you as it is for me, obviously, but we all have to find out what causes our consciousness to generate those healthy, neutral, positive thoughts. And we are creatures of habit. And there are certain habits that you have which will cause your consciousness to generate those neutral positive thoughts which actually help your life power. Now, I talked about wrong thinking before. Ideas, which are these incompletely developed factors which must be thoroughly contemplated and worked through in order to recognize and correspondingly handle the values or unvalues. I don't know if we're going to have time to go through the values and unvalues again because we're kind of running on time on the stream. The Meyer information says that the idea, with an A, is an incomplete, underdeveloped, unripe thing. However, that the ideal, with an L, is a completely developed and thought through notion. We are encouraged to totally develop and think through our ideas so that they can become mature, completely developed. Those mature, completely developed thoughts will not result in your extreme thoughts that lead to high emotion. Anyway, you've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great evening. Thank you very much for listening.